afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 6, 2009. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host today. Well, this was the week the Obama administration rolled out its big guns, so to speak, to begin the hard sell of their so-called health care policy reform. As we have documented through the LaRouche PAC website and the activities of the LaRouche Youth Movement, this is not a health care policy, but a commitment from the president and his inner circle of behavioral economists to begin a mass extermination of the elderly, the poor, the disabled, starting with those who are most helpless, to maintain a flow of loot to the banks, the insurance companies, and the for-profit healthcare industry. This is a policy which Lyndon LaRouche has charged is modeled on the one implemented under Adolf Hitler's orders by Nazi doctors to eliminate those who lived lives which, according to the Nazis who killed them, were not worth living. The plan of the administration is to use the present popularity of Obama, which is still holding up according to the latest polls, although his policies fall far behind when they're polled. But it's to use the present popularity of Obama, the collapse of the Republican Party, and the impotence of the opposition among serious healthcare professionals and some Democrats to ram this policy through before anyone knows what's in it. Well, that plan fell apart this week, thanks to the mobilization by LaRouche PAC and the LaRouche Youth Movement. The careful scripting of press conferences and events held by the administration officials could not prevent the truth from coming out, thanks to sharply focused questioning from LaRouche's representatives. At one event after another, on Tuesday and into Wednesday, our organizers forced Obama's representatives to either lie or to admit their goal is to slash the delivery of health care and to change the culture of the United States accordingly, all to protect the profitability of the private medical industry. And I might add to make sure there's no questions directed at their continued bailout of banks and financial institutions. In fact, our interventions were so effective that the administration seems to have ordered a press blackout of its own press conferences to keep the real story hidden from the public. Later in the week, LaRouche activists organizing against the Obama policies were being subjected to harassment and arrest, as if to confirm that they will do whatever it takes to sneak their Nazi medical policies through the Congress. Joining me to discuss this today on the LaRouche Show will be Paul Gallagher, a senior investigator and author with the Executive Intelligence Review, who attended the most prominent of these events, which was blacked out precisely because of his intervention, and also Alan Agray, a LaRouche Youth Movement organizer currently in Detroit, who was arrested by police in Detroit in outrageous fashion for the crime of organizing people at the county courthouse to oppose Obama's murderous health care reforms. So, Paul and Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
Now, Paul, before we get into the specifics of what happened on Tuesday at the Council of Economic Advisors event, just catch us up to date on where things stand with this the administration's legislation.
Well, a lot of it has been a shell game up to now, Harley, because the administration has not endorsed any legislation, has named so-called health care reform as its number one priority to get through immediately, and have targeted the end of July certently during the summer to force it through Congress, all the time without saying what it is. So this has become almost a shell game in Washington with people debating this policy, and whenever anyone asks one of the debaters, what is the legislation? We don't know what it is. What is the president's plan? We don't know what it is. So you have this secrecy and this shell game, which is an indication right away that something very devastating to the lives of Americans and to the life chances, particularly of chronically ill, very ill Americans, very elderly Americans, are on the line here with health care being cut.
Well, Paul, the one thing they are specific about is they keep saying the costs are too high, the costs are too high, they have to be cut. But they never seem to identify why the costs are too high.
Well, of course, if the costs were too high and the costs were to be brought down, then ban the HMOs, and you would bring the cost down by the estimation of physicians, who have a very little voice in this whole thing, but by the estimation of their organization, you'd bring the cost down by a third, or 30%, almost a third, by banning the HMOs, who are making billions of dollars of profit, paying salaries to their executives, which have increased by 1,300-1,500% in the last decade, and multiplying layer on layer on layer of highly paid corporate bureaucracies who are denying people care. So if you got rid of them, then you could easily expand existing Medicare and Medicaid programs to take care of everybody, because you'd be eliminating a third of the cost right there. That's ruled out. And so you're left to wonder, what is this cost-cutting, bring down the cost, what is it aimed at? And it's become very clear in the past week, it's aimed at the health care actually delivered to people who need it the most. It's aimed at eliminating that ration of health care and getting the most needy people of health care off the health care roll. Well, one way, of course, is they die, and it's already leading to that.
Well, we see that in the, we have a report today that I believe is up on the website now, the LaRouchePAC.com website, that already people are dying because of the lack of funds that states have. The Medicare, Medicaid programs include state components. Something like 46 of the states are in deficit, some severely so, like the state of California. And then on top of that, it seems as though the main area where they're talking about cost controls or cuts, not just controls, but cuts, is Medicare. Now, how is that supposed to help with containing costs other than just eliminating people?
Well, I can go into it more at length in terms of the surprising things that were admitted by Summers, Orszag, Christine Romer, and the other White House and Senate representatives.
Let's go into that then, because this was on Tuesday, I believe. The Council of Economic Advisors, with the people you just named, were there. I think there were a lot of press there from the transcript we've posted, and yet it's been blacked out. So what happened at that meeting on Tuesday?
Yeah, you would certainly wonder. Here's a major rollout of a report that the Council of Economic Advisors has done, claiming to show that the economy will be greatly benefited by a health care reform, presented by Christina Romer, the head of the Council of Economic Advisors. She's flanked by the leading senators involved, Baucus and Dodd. She's flanked by Larry Summers, the president's chief advisor, and by Orszag, the head of the guy that we've nailed as the real behaviorist killer here, who's the head of the OMB. And it's in the White House. And you look the next day at the major Washington area, and even minor Washington area press sources, and there's no coverage of it. So right there, what the heck is going on when they rolled this thing out and then killed the coverage? There were a lot of reporters there, AP, Bloomberg, Washington Post, so on and so forth. What happened is that in response, after they presented this report, which I won't detail now, but was quite in the line of behavioral economics, then when it was raised by me that this, you're talking about putting the HMOs in charge of a process of cutting health care in the country and cutting out a third of it, a total of one-third of the whole system, just cutting it out, you're going to kill people, you're going to deny people care, you're going to ration care, you're going to do what the Nazi doctors did, deny it if you can. And what they came out with was the startling admission that the cost of the health care reform is going to be borne by people on Medicare and Medicaid, that those are the programs that are going to be cut. And within a day, Obama had followed up with a letter to the two senators who were there, Dodd and Baucus, doubling the amount that he would support cutting from Medicare and Medicaid. He doubled it from $300+ billion to $500 to $600 billion that he would support and wanted cut out of Medicare and Medicaid over 10 years. Now that's about 10% of the total budget for those government for Medicare and Medicaid. So that's not tiny slice. That's the kind of cut that results in large numbers of people dying prematurely. It was exactly, more was revealed there, but it was exactly the premise of getting rid of useless eaters, of doing what the Nazis did, that I had raised to them. They confirmed it.
Now, Paul, in getting rid of Medicare and Medicaid, or cutting it back as they are, at the same time, it was made clear, I believe, by Orszag in his response to you, that they intend to expand, if nothing else, the role of private insurance.
Absolutely. I had at the tail end said, get rid of the HMOs. He said the president says the health care system is based on private insurance and it's going to stay that way. That was the first thing he said. So he ruled out completely any government single payer, which many physicians groups have shown would be far, far more efficient and cheaper to spread universal insurance by doing it by a government, essentially Medicare for all. He ruled that out and then went on to talk about the cutting Medicare and Medicaid. And then he and Larry Summers made clear that this was only the short-term cuts, which would be associated with supposedly insuring the uninsured by saving all this money from Medicare and Medicaid, that the bigger cuts that were envisioned by the White House against the health care of everybody, not Medicare, Medicaid, but everybody else, those bigger cuts had nothing to do with putting uninsured people on health insurance. Those bigger cuts were for economic reasons, for reasons of economic theory, that cutting health care in that way was supposedly going to stimulate growth in the economy. And this is what Summers in particular pushed. So they made it clear that these cuts are not, even in their view, necessary to put uninsured people on health insurance. These cuts are to be made electively because they want to make them according to their economic theory. This is real fascist killing.
Now, Paul, we've had several programs recently on the LaRouche Show where we've took up the theme from Lyndon LaRouche when he identified the behavioral economists as fascist. And what you've just outlined goes right at that again. What is it that the behavioral economists argue will provide these cost savings?
Well, they first come with this, and this is fully developed in this report of Christina Romer and the Council on Economic Advisers. They first make the argument that healthcare is an unequal playing field. They have a different, slightly different, more arcane term for it, but that it's an unequal marketplace because the people who are buying healthcare, that is you and me, know more about our health conditions than the poor insurance companies who have to sell it to us. We keep them in the dark, and therefore, because of that kind of behavior, it forces them to overcharge us for health insurance because they have to insure themselves against the fact that we're really lying about our health conditions. I'm not making this up.
Paul, I'm just wondering in hearing this, if anybody's raised the question of the amount that insurance companies have taken premiums and put them into derivatives and these toxic assets, that the government is now bailing them out on the other side.
Well, there's AIG. That's $200 billion to begin with.
Yeah.
And there's United Healthcare, the biggest one, which Andrew Cuomo, the New York Attorney General, just in January caught them, forced them to acknowledge a decade of consumer fraud and of fixing the prices of medical insurance and fixing down the amount that medical insurance companies would pay for medical care. And he forced them to admit it and to cough up money, $50 million as an initial damages, and much more of that to come.
I think most Americans who have health insurance are already aware anecdotally that goes on, but now we're talking about system-wide, there, as in the case of the bailout of the banks and financial institutions, they're rewarding the swindlers and taking the money out of the pockets of the ordinary citizen.
And in the response to my, and actually in the case of Senator Max Baucus and Senator Christopher Dodd, even long before I brought up anything at that meeting, they were insisting the HMOs have got it right. The HMOs do it right. As Baucus said, Kaiser Permanente, Geisinger Healthcare, he named several Colorado-based HMOs. He said, they do it right. We have to do it the way they do it. Nothing could be clearer that they want to keep the HMO killers completely in charge of this so-called healthcare reform. If you do that, you guarantee that the actual medical care delivered, the so-called services in fee-for-service, are going to be cut. And as Orszag said directly in response to me, we're going to eliminate unnecessary tests. We're going to eliminate unnecessary procedures. We're going to level the big discrepancies between one part of the country and another in terms of what kind of care is given for the same condition. And by that, we're going to save a lot of money. And by that, Dr. Orszag, you're going to kill a lot of people. That's where that's the openly fascist aspect of this.
Well, you're listening to Paul Gallagher. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, June 6th, 2009. We're discussing the explosive revelations from Paul and a few other people from LaRouche PAC and the LaRouche Youth Movement, the revelations that the administration blacked out their own press conferences when they were inconveniently confronted with the truth behind their policies. And we'll be speaking more about this for the rest of the hour. We welcome any email questions or comments from our listeners. You can send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's LaRouchePub.com, radio@larouchepub.com. Now, Paul, we do have on the line someone who was arrested for bringing this up, and we'll get to him in a moment. But I would just like to review for our listeners why it is that we characterize these policies as explicitly Nazi. And this, of course, goes back to the Nuremberg trials. What is the parallel that is so compelling that these guys don't see, or maybe they see and don't want people to know, between what the Nazis did and what is being proposed with this so-called healthcare reform?
Well, what was exposed in the Nuremberg trials, and particularly in memorialized in the statements of Dr. Leo Alexander, who was an advisor to the prosecution there, is that the Nazi mass killings began not with the concentration camps, but earlier than that, in 1939, with official orders to kill the chronically ill, the mentally ill, the institutionalized, including what we would call today nursing homes and long-term care clinics, to kill those people by categorizing among them those who were considered too expensive to treat and save the money by withdrawing their care and kill them. And Hitler himself personally signed the order known as the T4 or Tiergarten 4 order or policy, which was, as Hitler said, to save 300,000 Reichsmarks per year at that time by eliminating treatment from these people who were called lives unworthy of life. And this, as Dr. Alexander said, was the first step down the slope which led to the Holocaust, was the targeting of these people for deliberate, quote-unquote, mercy killing. Now,
mercy killing, as in, I think Alexander explicitly used the term euthanasia.
Euthanasia. And this accomplished by taking a national survey, and now we're talking about what Peter Orszag, Larry Summers, Christina Romer, Obama are proposing, by taking a national survey of treatments all over the country under some sort of federal health board modeled on the British National Institute of Health and Clinical Excellence, the so-called NICE over there, and then whittling those treatments down by identifying unnecessary treatments, excessive treatments, treatments which last too long, treatments which are too intense relative to what's done in another, you know, in Houston, where they have so many medical centers, the treatments there are very intense relative to what's done in rural Georgia. So they come out with studies which say we have to find a point in between here, which means whittling down the treatments that are given in the areas where the best treatments are available. And as you do that, you are identifying patients and conditions of patients which are too far advanced to treat, too expensive to treat, and as Orszag said, excessive treatments, excessive tests, excessive MRIs, these kind of things have to be eliminated, and that's how we'll save the money, and you will put people to death by that means.
And they also operate from these calculations, these almost utilitarian Benthamite calculations, that given that the cost of keeping someone alive near the end of the life is much higher because of the treatment that's needed, that this is where you can save money, which is where the euthanasia question comes in.
Right, and especially given that the poor health insurance companies have got to charge well above the average, as Christina Romer explained, because we're all fooling them about the real state of our health. And if they charged a reasonable amount, her report says, all the sickest people would immediately buy that insurance, and they would overload the insurance, and the insurance companies would lose money. It's really a terrible fate that they might suffer.
Now, Paul, just to finish this picture, when we talk about euthanasia, when we talk about the elimination of those people who cost too much, whether it's because of congenital disease, chronic illness, physical breakdown, which happens to all of us at the end of our life, there's an organization called the Hastings Center, which actually was set up by eugenicists, by people who were supporters of the Nazi racial policies that were later grafted onto the euthanasia and useless eaters policies. I wonder if you could say a word or two about this, because this is being covered on our website, but I'd like you to say something about that.
Yeah, we attacked and exposed the Hastings Bioethics Center on the Hudson in New York 30-plus years ago when it was being set up by the Sloan Foundation and by the Russell Sage Foundation, Sloan of the General Motors, Sloan interests, and the directly British-controlled Russell Sage Foundation. They set this thing up in order to start the push in the United States for assisted suicide and other forms of euthanasia that they have tried to force feed into the medical system by defining what were ethical, they called it bioethics, defining what they called ethical situations for terminating life, for willfully terminating life by withdrawing treatment or even by administering a drug which will kill. And this became known as bioethics, with the Hastings Center being the first to spread this. So we have been attacking this from its inception.
And this is, when you talk about bioethics, I was out in Salt Lake City not that long ago, and we had a meeting in downtown Salt Lake City at the library from which you could see the University of Utah. And on the University of Utah campus is a woman named Margaret Batten, who's a professor of ethics, who is an advocate of physician-assisted suicide, who's written articles with Ezekiel Emanuel, who is one of the top officials working with the Obama administration in developing this healthcare policy. Now, the thing I want to emphasize a simple point to our listeners, which is that as we go through this picture and it becomes unmistakably clear that this is a repeat of the Nazi policies, and that what's being targeted right now with the most weak and debilitated sections of the population, including among the poor whose voices are not often heard, there already are people dying from these cuts, people who could live, people who could be saved. And there already is this kind of genocide policy being carried out. We have to build a mobilization in this country quickly to get the truth out there and to mobilize, to put excruciating pressure on the Congress not to submit to this top-down Nazi policy. Now, as part of that mobilization, the LaRouche Youth Movement is out in force in every center where we are, organizing people with very provocative posters that show Obama with a Hitler-style toothbrush mustache, talking about the Obama administration Nazi policy, and provoking good discussions wherever we go. And some people get angry and don't like it, but many people, including doctors and medical professionals, are responding. Now, a couple days ago in Detroit, Michigan, when our organizers were out talking to the population, we saw an example of something else that's reminiscent of Nazi Germany. And I'd like to bring on LaRouche Youth Movement organizer Alan Agray to give us a report on what happened to him in Detroit, Michigan. Alan?
Well, this is just a preface. This has been what happened was a flash. It was a climax of really a repeated amount of harassment that's been happening by the police officers in downtown Detroit since we've been on this campaign going after Obama's healthcare proposal. And what happened is that we set up our tables in front of the 36th District Court in downtown Detroit, and within about five to ten minutes of setting up there, where we were having like people coming up to our tables. One case in specific was a man dressed up in a suit, you know, came down and was like, "You want to help us stop Obama's Nazi healthcare policy?" And he showed me his BlackBerry that had the website that had the Tiergarten 4 article on our EIR website. And so there was people there were just totally polarized with what we were doing. We had the signs up, and one of the cops that was patrolling there, he came out and he said, "Do you have a vendor's license for doing this out here?" And we said, "No, we have the Constitution. This is not commercial. We're doing this. Is our constitutional right to do this?" And he said, "You guys will be gone in 5 minutes." And he came back. He went back into the courthouse and came out immediately with another officer. And they proceeded to get in, like just start yelling in our faces. You know, "He's got to get out. You got to get out now. You got to go. You got to get out." And one of them got in Jamar's face, who was also organizing with me, and said, "You want to go to jail? We can take you to jail. You want to go to jail?" And just kept yelling in his face, and we're like, we just said we have the constitutional right to be here. And the officer that was yelling at me, during this period, they actually flipped over our table and threw over our signs.
The police did this?
Yeah. And they threw our literature to the ground. And then the one that was talking that arrested me, he actually said, So I'm going to get you on, if you don't get out of here now, we're going to get you on a disorderly conduct." And I said, I didn't do anything that would warrant disorderly, or didn't do anything. Why would you do that? I didn't do anything disorderly. And right when I was saying that, he put the cuffs on me and took me in. And during this period, I'm like, this is real fascism. And he said, yeah, well, I'm a fascist. And then he took me downstairs of the courthouse, and it took at least 5 to 10 minutes before he even read me my rights at all.
And what were you charged with?
I was charged with impeding traffic on a huge public sidewalk, and
it's a rather absurd
disorderly
charge.
Conduct. They gave me a ticket. They held me for 2.5 hours, and they ended up. He said, "Well, you're lucky. We didn't hold you overnight." And I think the reason why they didn't hold me overnight was because I was singing in the cell.
Now, Alan, let me just bring some context to this. Paul was just talking earlier about Alfred Sloan and one of the promoters of this euthanasia policy from General Motors. It's quite obvious to most of our listeners, I'm sure, that General Motors was euthanized this last week or in the last 10 days with the bankruptcy. Detroit, Michigan is an area where auto workers are losing jobs, all the related industries, you have high unemployment, there's shutdown of the economy, and as a result, there are more and more people who are losing whatever health care they had. So obviously, bringing this issue up in a post-industrial wreck heap like the Detroit area because of the collapse of auto would obviously be having quite an impact. So clearly, they didn't want you to be talking to people.
Yeah, I mean, we before this, just to go back, we there were three town hall meetings, or two town hall meetings and one meet and greet with three different congressional representatives that we had a week ago. With one was with Sandy Levin, another one was with Gary Peters, and the last one was with John Dingell. And in every single one of these events, specifically with the Sandy Levin event, when we spoke out on this genocidal policy, and made it clear that he was not going to go after the HMOs, and the people in the audience were not, you know, usually you go in, when you're in place other places, you know, they'll cut you off or they'll say, oh, you know, just keep, you know, we don't want to hear this. And but there, everybody in the audience was totally attentive to what we were saying. And we made it totally clear that this was a total Nazi policy. And also you had in John Dingell, the same thing in John Dingell's his town hall meeting he gave. His response when we said, look, we don't want to go out, we want to stop this cut in Medicare. And he said, well, we can't go for the perfect good, but so we have to go with this medical reform of Obama's. And so that was, you know, three major interventions. And the Gary Peters one is there was a huge recognition of the need to shut down the HMOs also.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Paul, let me go back to a couple of things, and Alan, stay on because we want to come back to you a little bit more about the organizing. But I think this does give people a flavor of the fact that there is an effort to silence the opposition, up to and including the point of silencing their own press conference. But here's a question that we got from one of our listeners, Richard Townsend in Dallas, who asks about Baucus's proposal this week saying that he's considering eliminating long-time tax subsidies to business that would offset their costs for employee health insurance programs. And also they're talking now about taxing employees' health care benefits. And he goes on to say that eliminating these subsidies would put companies in position of giving up their policies and forcing everyone to take the new Obama health care policy. Is this part of what they're doing to force people to accept this?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand companies are already in a position, of course, smaller companies, where they're giving up their health plans. They're being forced to give up their health plans because of the tremendous escalation in the costs that the HMOs have piled on this. This has doubled its percentage of the GDP in the short period of time since President Clinton and Hillary Clinton's attempted health care reform was killed back in the 1990s. Where they were actually going to cut the HMOs down to size. Since that was killed, the part of GDP that goes to these costs has doubled. So this is crushing a lot of companies. And now they're talking about taking the health benefits that the companies do offer and putting a tax on them and using that, quote-unquote, to reform the healthcare system. Well, what's reform? What was admitted, and it was admitted very clearly by Summers and Orszag in response to my intervention at that White House meeting, was that none of this is going to pay for putting the uninsured on insurance. That's going to be done by cutting Medicaid and Medicare by 10% and killing elderly people and killing poor people. So taxing health benefits of companies and taxing not-for-profit hospitals, which is another one of Baucus's balloons floating around, to eliminate the tax exemption of nonprofit hospitals and tax them, which will result in the real world in those hospitals closing. These things are not for putting anybody uninsured on insurance. These are for the so-called efficiencies for the economy that Christina Romer is talking about in her Friedmanite report on healthcare. These are simply aimed at, as Orszag said, and then Summers made a special point of saying at this meeting in the White House, getting rid of one-third of the costs of healthcare in this country, which are waste, and are to be cut out. Over, and you know, they say this is going to take some time.
Well, and LaRouche keeps saying you want to cut a third of the inefficiencies and the waste and the fraud and abuse and corruption. Do away with HMOs and the insurance companies.
Right. And you have Baucus up there insisting the HMOs are doing it right. They're going to be in charge. So that tells you if you're going to slash costs that way and you're not going to touch the HMOs, in fact, you're going to set up under his plan and under Kennedy's plan, which was introduced yesterday, you're going to set up so-called connector exchanges to, you've seen these progressive insurance company ads on TV with the little lady who tells people, you can choose, we'll find the best plan for you. These plans now, Baucus and Kennedy, are to set up a national insurance interchange or a national insurance connector. Harley, you'll have strong memories of this from the electricity connector that was set up by Enron in California. It added a huge layer of costs and profits for Enron and a few other companies to the cost of electricity. And that's what this, already in Massachusetts, where there is a Massachusetts connector, it's nothing but an additional health management organization on top of all the others, making the same level of profits as the others. And the estimate is that it has increased overnight the cost of health care in Massachusetts by 4%.
I was going to ask you about the Massachusetts plan, because this is something that is sometimes pushed. Schwarzenegger tried to do something similar, and fortunately it was voted down. But people say, well, this is Mitt Romney's plan. He was for the private business sector, and he used the government to help the private business sector. And then you get someone like Kennedy who says, well, this is an example of a government health plan. But from my reading, people who can't afford insurance, nevertheless, are forced to get insurance. The government, the state government, will subsidize it, but it means that you still have to pay something that you don't really have for insurance, which still has something like $2,500 deductible on top of that. So the critique of the Massachusetts plan is that it's a big boondoggle for the insurance companies, but it's providing almost nothing for people who previously weren't covered, who now have coverage which they have to pay for, which doesn't give them any coverage.
Right, and what everyone agrees up there is that the immediate impact in 1 year has been that the cost of health insurance and health care has leaped up since that Massachusetts plan was put in effect, and people simply cannot afford to buy it. Even with the subsidies, they're buying these rock-bottom, very high deductible plans, still costing them $7,000 or $8,000 a year, with large deductibles in the range of $5,000 to $10,000 before they get any coverage. So this is what's being claimed as the mandate for everybody to have coverage, but all that extra cost is going into additional activities, profit line activities of the HMOs and of their Massachusetts connector. So Kennedy and Baucus want to do that for the country. The whole thing is, it's a giveaway and a scandalous giveaway at the same time as the idea of Orszag and the behavioralists and the British advisors like Simon Stevens from United Healthcare, who are advising them on this, is that every treatment that you're getting will be subject to review and national review, comparing it to other places. You shouldn't be doing this many MRIs. They're not doing that many in rural Georgia, so you shouldn't do that many there, and grinding the doctors down in a situation where you already have the number of mammograms, for example, falling by 16% in recent years. You already have the number of MRI machines in the country falling, the number of MRIs being given falling. And now they're talking about eliminating MRIs for whole categories of injuries. So, you know, these are the things that cause people to die.
Paul, you mentioned something. There are two other points I want to get to before we have just a final wrap-up discussion. And we still have time, by the way, if you want to send in a question to Paul or Alan at radio@larouchepub.com. But one of the things you hear a lot of so-called conservatives and libertarians say, oh, I don't want the government to determine my health care. I want doctors to do it. Under the HMO system, people actually have much less access to doctors than they had under the old Hill-Burton. Isn't that true?
Yeah, and the doctors have much less access to making decisions. As one doctor wrote recently in an op-ed here, the doctors now are basically allowed to diagnose, and they've got technology which makes them very good at diagnosing. But from that point on, in terms of treatment, the insurance company takes over. The HMO takes over and determines what it's going to be.
And doctors under what we can make out of the plan so far, the doctors who insist on life-saving measures, the adequate imaging and technologies, they are subject to being punished for doing that. Is that or
this
sanctioned?
This was the testimony of Dr. Alan Himmelstein in the committee. We published it this morning, his colloquy with Representative Kucinich, that this already is occurring in Massachusetts under the Massachusetts plan, that doctors who overprescribe and overtest and overtreat are being singled out, and attempts being made to discredit them so that they'll have fewer referrals, in particular from other doctors, fewer patients. They're going to them will result in your health insurance costs increasing. Again, this is how you eliminate, as Orzag said to me, unnecessary tests, unnecessary procedures, unnecessary treatments. And the result is that people die.
And it's not unnecessary from the standpoint of the patient's health or the doctor's concern. It's unnecessary from the standpoint of the insurance company or the HMO's profit.
Right.
Now, Paul, one of the other proposals that was made, and I thought this was actually somewhat of a giveaway. I can't remember offhand who said it, but the proposal that, it was Daschle. The proposal that there be Federal Reserve-type boards, regional boards that will determine treatments that will not be under the influence of political or under political influence to provide certain kinds of treatment. In other words, you're removing it one step further from doctors. What can you tell us about this proposal from Daschle, who's a real fascist, huh?
Yeah, he also was giving meetings that same day in Washington, and Bill Jones and I intervened at those meetings as well. Christina Romer appeared at other meetings besides the one at the White House. It's really mysterious that none of these meetings were covered, although some of them were quite large in any of the media. But Daschle, from the time of his book last year, which is called Critical, he being the real genius of Obama's health care reform, from the time of his book, he was demanding some kind of a national health board, national medical procedures board, modeled explicitly on two things. The NICE, which I referenced earlier in Britain, which is notorious now throughout Europe after 10 years of practice for denying necessary treatments and resulting in lower lifespans of Britons in various categories of chronic illness. And secondly, the model of the Federal Reserve. Completely, and Daschle even says in the book, FDR tampered with the independence of the Federal Reserve, but Harry Truman bravely restored it. And that's the kind of wholly independent Federal Reserve-type body that we want to be denying you medical care. Can you imagine if it were really like the Federal Reserve? Bankers would be the only ones. They would get wonderful care, just like they do now financially. They would get excessive care of every kind, and everybody else would be cut off.
Well, I want to mention one thing about the California situation. I just wrote an article that will be out in the EIR, the EIW this week on LaRouchePub.com on Schwarzenegger's so-called May revision. And in his speech, Schwarzenegger detailed a few of the cuts he's making, including in-home service for Alzheimer's patients, for elderly and disabled, for paralyzed, people for whom the state was providing a small subsidy for medical professionals to go in make sure they're eating, that they're still alive, that they're moving around, and that they're if you remove this one, the large numbers of these social groups or healthcare groups went before the legislature and said people are going to start dying. It's going to shorten lives. And Schwarzenegger said, I hear the pain, I see the fear in your eyes, but we have no choice. The wallet is empty, the bank is empty, we cannot pay. And I pointed out in the article that Schwarzenegger went to President Obama and asked for some bailout funds, which is something Lyndon LaRouche had proposed, that the federal government, instead of bailing out Societe Generale or Deutsche Bank or Royal Bank of Scotland with U.S. bailout money passed through AIG and others, that instead some of those funds go to the states, some in direct grants for these kinds of programs and others for infrastructure programs that will create jobs and so on. And Obama said to Schwarzenegger, no, we're not going to give you money. You have to make tough decisions. And a leading Democrat in California told me that the word is going around that the White House is going to watch very carefully to see if there's any reaction in California to these killer cuts, with their hope that there will be no reaction to pave the way for the administration to go ahead with that. I'm wondering, Paul, if you have some thoughts on that.
Well, not on that report specifically about California, but I mean from that contact of yours. But the cuts in healthcare, which are going on the state level, which in some states and in some categories are pretty devastating, like they are in California, not only there, those cuts are part and parcel of the killing situation, the Nazi killing situation involved in the healthcare reform at the federal level. It's not unknown to them, and your illustration makes it very clear, that it's not unknown to them, to Obama and Orzag and Summers and Ezekiel Emanuel, that the Medicare program they're proposing to cut by 10% is already being devastated by state cuts, and that the Medicare program, which they propose to cut by 10%, is already being tied up by the closing of hospitals, which are supported at the state level or on the local level. So in a situation which cries out for increasing Medicare coverage, increasing Medicare spending in order to cope with this financial collapse, instead, when you add a 10% across-the-board cut to these programs instead, it's really murderous because you know what's going on at the local level.
Well, I'd like to add just a footnote on this California situation. And if any of our listeners are in California, you'd better get into the streets and get out there with our literature and start fighting this. Schwarzenegger very often says, we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem. And this is part of the argument that the states have spent too much. But in his address to the legislature on Monday or Tuesday, Schwarzenegger dropped a startling figure. He said the revenue to the state of California in 2009 is 27% below revenues to the state in 2008. And this is the long-term effect of deindustrialization, the implementation of the destruction of an outsourcing of industry, the auto sector, defense sector, heavy machinery, and replacement of it with a post-industrial tourism and entertainment economy. And we see this kind of collapse. Now, this is the Obama administration is doing the same thing, accommodating itself to this post-industrial collapse by saying that we're going to defend the profits of the financial institutions at the expense of the lives of the people. And this is precisely the outlook of the British financial elite who created the Hitler movement, who put Mussolini in power, and they're the same ones who rammed Obama through the Democratic primary process and put him in office for precisely this kind of policy. Now, Alan, I want to get back to you because Michigan, as we said before, is devastated. You used to be out in California. In fact, Alan, for those who don't know, was one of the people who did a brilliant Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonation, but I won't ask you to do it now, Alan. But you've looked at the situation in California. You've looked at it at Michigan. Can we organize people? Are people too beaten down in Michigan that they won't respond, or can we get under their skin and give them some hope and give them a direction?
Well, you look at what's been happening. You have these reactions taking place, and it's because we're having such a huge impact on the population. The reason why they're coming out and harassing us. And the thing is that there people every time I go out and organize into the you know post offices in downtown, you get an amazing response to us because people are at a point where they're just completely devastated. They're completely, you know, at the end, and they need leadership. They need people to lead them. And it's something that I've recognized here more so than in LA, where you have more people that are in fantasy land about, you know, how if they're going to get a job with Hollywood or something. But here, it's more people are less delusioned by the fact that, you know, the reality of their situation is affecting, you know, everybody in this area. I mean, we actually went up to Pontiac to the GM's truck assembly plant that's slated for shutdown in October. And a lot of the people that were coming out of there, they knew this is totally insane, and you could tell that they've been thinking about exactly what we've been talking about. And a lot of them, you know, took extra literature to take out to their friends and others. I mean, that's something also that's been very frequent, is that people will take a bunch of literature to get out for us.
Now, let me ask you this: the polls still show that Obama is somewhere above 60% popularity. But when people are asked, do you support his economic policy, do you support his health care policy, the polling is still relatively low in the 25-30% range. And I think, Paul, part of the point we've been making is if people knew what these policies were, the policies would be would have much less support, and it would eventually hit him. Are you beginning to see, Alan, people starting to question, gee, who is this guy? Is this the guy we voted for? We thought he was on our side. Are you beginning to see that happen?
Yeah. A lot of people in the lower, especially in the lower 80%, and people who, you know, this whole argument that, you know, it's a lot of people come up to us and say it's a racial thing or whatnot. No, it's everybody's coming up to us, and it's not this divided line anywhere. And we actually had one of the relatives of John Conyers come up to our table in Madison Heights, she actually came up to the Obama sign with the toothbrush mustache, and she was like, "I agree with what you're doing, but you might get some trouble with this sign. But I think what you're doing is right." I mean, and she took literature,
mm-hmm.
And so you have a lot of people inside the population that are actively listening to what we're saying. They're totally responsive to what we're doing. I mean, you do get one or two people that come by and they'll be like, "Oh, you know, screw you guys," or, you know, "I love Obama, I'm not going to talk to you." But majority of the people that are there, they want to talk. We've been having our tables swarmed with people.
I think the people who are listening to this program should take a lesson from the LaRouche Youth Movement. And that is that you have to overcome your fear about telling the truth. But I think one of the points we have to make is that illusions kill. There were many, many, many Jews in Germany in the 1930s who had an illusion that Hitler would not follow through with his threats, that they would be safe, they would be protected, that the German people would protect them. German culture was the highest culture in the world. And we saw the results of those sets of illusions. Now, I think, Paul, one of the things that you encounter is that there are a lot of people we talk to today who say, "Well, yes, I agree, but." And the but is very often the illusion that somehow survival is a personal issue as opposed to a political or a social issue. How do you, if you have a chance, well, here's your chance. You're talking to listeners who want to know what to do. What should they do right now?
Well, they've got to realize that this is part and parcel of the economic collapse, which infuriated them, and the banking bailouts still continuing, which has caused more of an out rage among the American population than anything that's been done for decades in Washington, and that that bailout has led very directly into an assault on the standards of health care in the country and an attempt to define a large category of people gradually as lives unworthy to be saved, lives unworthy to be lived. And they can't let this happen any more than they could let the bank bailout happen without the mass unemployment that followed, that resulted from that policy. You know, their outrage had to be put into a movement channeled in such a way as to actually stop it. They had to back LaRouche because of what he had, his record on this in the past. And if they had done so in significant numbers, it could have been, the bank bailout policy could have been stopped. It's just continuing now. The president virtually said so very early in his administration, right around the time of the inauguration and the stimulus bill. Now we're having to spend a lot of money. We're in this bank. We're saving the financial system. Then we're going to have to save a lot of money, cut a lot of money, and we're going to do that by addressing the entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security is the next one coming. So people, it's what they were up in arms about, because they haven't stopped it yet, it's now leading to the killing of innocent people by withdrawal of medical care, repeating of policies that were done by the Nazis. This has got to be stopped by them, and the way to do it is to back the guy who has the track record of having called it, of having forecast it, of known what was happening, and that's the LaRouche Political Action Committee.
Well, the LaRouche PAC is going to be putting out a mass pamphlet, I think very at the beginning of this next week, which goes through in detail both the Nazi precedent and the policies of people like Ezekiel Emanuel, Orszag, Larry Summers, Romer, and the others. That pamphlet will be available, and people can call and order copies at 800-929-7566. So if you're out there organizing and you have friends in some remote location somewhere, give them that number, 800-929-7566. And also, every day now, there's a morning update called Off the Cuff, which is keeping people updated. In fact, Alan, you may have been surprised to find that you were the subject of an off-the-cuff report. Your arrest was a subject of that. People can go onto the LaRouche PAC website and get an update every single morning. And, you know, I think this is the moment in history where there is going to have to be a change. If we don't get the kind of changes discussed by Lyndon LaRouche, and I'll just mention, he spoke today of the efforts that are being made by the British to turn the Russians and the Chinese against the dollar. And he said, if that happens, we're going to have a complete and total collapse of the financial system, far beyond where we are right now, the end of the banking system. So, Alan, any last words from you?
I think we're going to go back to the courthouse.
Well, that brings up another point.
And
people should call in their contributions to LaRouche PAC. So if Alan needs bail money for standing up for your rights, you can make those contributions. Paul, we have a little more than a minute. Any last comments?
I was going to ask Alan if the charges have been dropped.
They gave me a ticket. That's all. They haven't sent any. They said the court was going to send me something, but I haven't gotten it. So.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't said perfectly clearly, ban the HMOs. That's what you're fighting for here. Repeal the 1973 HMO law, which was given us by Richard Nixon and the gang of criminals around him in the White House. Ban that. Get rid of the HMOs. And this is a problem that can be solved. And that's what LaRouche is proposing. We should make that very clear.
And then I think, again, go to the website. We have the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act. We have legislation that can gear up the economy. Nobody has to die so that the swindlers in the international banks can have another quarter of profitability. And that's really the issue. So we have to fight for this nation, fight for our constitutional tradition, and use the measures outlined by LaRouche, which will work. They worked before in the 30s. They worked for Abraham Lincoln. They worked for our founding fathers. So no one has to die to protect the corrupt policies of the last 40 years. So we've run out of time. I'd like to thank Paul Gallagher and Alan Agray for joining us today. We'll be back next week, Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for the next edition of The LaRouche Show. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Arthur.
Thank you, Arthur.